What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either.
Really.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that again.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Happy Monday.
We're doing something a little bit different for our episode today. If folks remember from a few weeks ago, we had someone named Abby Van Meter on our podcast to talk with us about like communication theory and parenting. And we both shared stories on Abby's podcast, Cosmo Parenting. One of the amazing things about it is that it's a parenting podcast, but every episode is like less than 10 minutes long, which I really appreciate in terms of just like the commitment that it takes to listen to a whole episode. And every month they have a different theme, and they have like experts come on and talk about that theme. They're like different tools offering parents. And then every month they have like a parent come tell a real life, hands-on, up-close story that applies to that theme. And Caitlin and I both did that. And so what we thought we would do today is just like play those stories for you. Mm-hmm. And then Caitlin and I are going to listen to them again. It's been several months since we recorded them. And then afterwards, we're going to do a little Q&A with each other, kind of follow-up reflection about the stories and where we are now and what we're thinking about, you know, a few months down the line. So please enjoy our short little stories about parenting. The themes are, for Caitlin's episode, is like patterns in parenting, and the theme for my episode is adaptation. So see you on the other, hear you, talk with you on the other side.
Today, I am joined by Rebecca to share a parenting story. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Abby.
I'm so happy that you're here, and I'm so excited to hear your story today. As you know, this month is our theme of adaptation. Two generalizations that we've offered people is that adaptation can be planned or spontaneous, and also that adaptation can be positive or negative. I'm going to leave it at that and just say, would you please share with us your story about adaptation?
Oof. Yeah. This is such a rich, compelling theme to me. One of the first things that came to my mind with this prompt was thinking about this pattern, this thread that I see emerging in my own little family between my own childhood and now watching my son go through childhood. The first few years of my life were shaped by cancer treatments. I had a really aggressive cancer on my spine, and starting from the age of 14 months old, a lot of my life was in hospitals with needles and blood pressure cuffs and MRIs and surgeries. And it was a really distinct environment for a little human to grow up in. And I really responded to or adapted to that environment by developing a lot of really intense coping skills around ignoring pain, pretending that I'm not in pain or that I feel sick. So I learned to be like the shiniest, best gold star patient, always smiling, singing, always sweet, always charming, and never complaining, never whining, never crying, and getting a lot of pride and affirmation from that.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, once the cancer is gone, which, yay, thank you, medicine. Thank you, doctors. I still had those coping tools, right? Like I had developed them before I really even have memory in a lot of ways. And so that is a tool that has limited me a lot in my adulthood. Learning to pay attention to your body being in pain is also an adaptive tool, right? Like being able to know I'm in pain is a red flag. It's a signal. And if you don't ever listen to that, you're a little lost, right? And so my son, when he reached his first birthday and was getting closer to this age that I was when all of this began for me, I felt very invested in adapting that script for him and giving him a new framework for thinking about pain and his body and his experience of the world. And when he was about one, we took him in for his very first blood draw at the doctor's office. And so we went in, my husband and I both went in with him. We're in this tiny little room. And I had been so worried about this blood draw for like the week leading up to it, like imagining his experience of pain and looking at us and realizing we're not stopping it. Like, mm-hmm. I was very worried. And that first appointment, they put the needle in his skin, basically, and my whole body is tense. And I'm watching him and he barely responds. Like, he just scowls at everyone in the room, like, what are you doing? And then it's over and he kind of whines a little bit. And I heard my own voice in that moment just like spilling out of me. And I said, way to go, baby. You didn't even cry. You're so brave. Like, instinctively.
Yes.
Fell out of my mouth. And as soon as I even heard it, I just like wanted to pull it all back because I know that that is the narrative that I heard growing up, that that's all well-intentioned, right? But it's this affirmation that like, when you don't cry, when you don't acknowledge that pain, you've won, you've done it. And so I knew we had another blood draw coming up in about a month. And I was very intentional leading up to that. Like, what are the words I want to say? What is the most sturdy tool to offer him? And so we went in again and he remembered this time. So he was already like more resistant than the first time. And he really protested physically and verbally, like he was crying. And I heard all of the other adults in the room saying, you're okay. You're okay. And I just knew so deeply that he wasn't, and that it felt like not a sturdy parent in that moment to lie to him, right? Like to tell him that your experience right now is not real. So in the moment I said, I know it hurts. It won't last forever. And then when it was over, I said, you did it. How did it feel? And that's one that we've continually tried to affirm with him, is like, your experience of the world is real. Whatever moment of pain you're in will not last forever. And being able to name what you're feeling is important. Gosh, I'm like feeling emotional even. Like, I think even for me, just that idea of like, your experience of the world is real. And when you feel pain, you are actually in pain. It also will not last forever. But being able to sit and bear witness to pain, like, and not pretend that it's something that it's not, or not pretend that it's not real, I think felt like some repair in me a little bit. This adapted script is maybe one we'll continue to adapt as he gets older and pivot with different situations and different moments. But for now, it feels a lot sturdier and more useful for the long run, maybe, of a script for him to have. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love the length of this story because it's really easy for us to put a beginning and end on episodes of our lives. And you started your story about, quote unquote, the way I prompted you to know, your parenting story about adaptation started with you as a child and how you were parented. And that is a part of this story about your son's experience. And I think that feels really hopeful to me that our stories are ongoing. It's not, we're not looking back at a bunch of endings. Wow. It's all open-ended. And so this adaptation, you teaching him how to adapt, it's, you know, you're kind of meeting him in this place of also adapting.
Yeah. Well, and I love that you pulled that out, Abby, because that's really comforting to me in thinking about my own son continuing to adapt and what,
yeah,
in what ways he'll feel compelled to adapt. You know, like, it's very striking to me how different our experiences of the world are already, he and I. And it's very easy for me to feel like I'm going to screw this up. And then that's it. I screwed it up, you know? And you've offered us this like hopeful framework of like, it's always continuing to adapt and evolve. And that can be really hopeful.
Yeah, it's like expansive on both ends of like, the story starts way earlier than you think, but it also doesn't end as early as we think either. Yeah. And that is that kind of hopeful. And so, yeah, Rebecca, thank you so much for sharing this story. And I just think you're doing really wonderful things.
Okay. So, Rebecca, you told the story about Otto at the doctor when he was like a year old. So I am curious how that the script that you're giving him / giving yourself as you walk with him through painful moments, how is that changing or developing? How's that evolved?
Okay, this is a really great question because I feel like it's
coming up a lot these days for us. And I even, it's interesting, I think a few weeks ago, we even just did an episode about how triggering it is for me to be around Otto's really expressive expressive expressions of pain. It's a really, I think this is going to be something that I'm working through for a while. It's interesting to me that making sure Otto felt free to express pain was so important to me from the outset. And even as our childhoods are different in so many ways, that was really important to me. And it is interesting to see the ways that he has really embodied that, moved through that, owned that, right? Like my beautiful son has no hesitation to express the angst, the ills, the pains of his life. And objectively speaking, that feels right to me. That it's so different than my own self, my own way of moving through the world. And I really, I feel like I appreciate that he doesn't hold back. And as we've already established, it is also triggering to me. But one thing that it's been really interesting for me, this is like real time pivot land. Like I'm trying to figure out how to steer the ship, captain, pilot the plane in real time, because there's also this interesting piece of it. This like double-edged other side of indulging all of your pain, which is that like sometimes it feels like it can be debilitating, or like, is there a point at which being in your suffering and naming your suffering, like, can we get stuck in that? Or is it like holding you back from moving on to the next thing? Or like, how do you embody the both and of that? Obviously, I struggle with it hard, which is why I think that I swung the pendulum so far when he was young. Not to say that I would do doctor's appointments differently. I think that like it is totally fine to cry when you get a shot. Like there's nothing about that I wouldn't shut down. But just in like the everyday, you know, like I scraped my arm at the playground moment, or like I'm getting my fingernails clipped and I don't like the sensation moment, you know, whatever that is. Like is there a both and, or is there a way to like acknowledge pain as real and hold space for it, and also keep going at a certain point, you know, like, and what is that point? So, I have just been really trying to figure out the landing point in that. So last night was an interesting moment for us. So my son has beautiful long hair and I brush it every night because, you know, it gets tangly and there's like jelly in it and stuff. So I like, and he really does not, he loves his long hair. He does not like having it brushed. So it's kind of this negotiation, like we can cut your hair if this is too painful. No, I don't want to cut my hair. Okay, well, we're going to have to brush it, but he hates having it brushed.
God, we have that same.
Do you? Okay.
Charlie is like, I want long hair like Pops. I want long curls. And I'm like, okay, well, you cannot walk around with the back of your hips. It just mats and sticks straight out. The battle of like, okay, if you want it, we have to take care of it. We can also cut it off. But if you want it long, we got to take care of it.
Yes, exactly. We have that conversation most nights. And so I am like gently taking this brush through his hair. And I'm like, no sudden moves. And like every time there's like the slightest tangle, he's like, wah! So we're doing that dance. And then eventually I'm like, okay, we're done. And part of this is just that he was like so tired, right? And everything is harder when you're tired and it's bedtime. So I'm like, we're done. We did it. But he like can't stop crying and howling, really. And so we needed to get his pajamas on. It was already like way past his bedtime. He's tired. We got to do the thing. And so I held his hand in his face in my hands and I kissed him and I said, I'm so sorry that hurt. are you? And then I was, and then like waited maybe 2 seconds. And then I was like, okay, we're going to put your jammies on. And I like helped him and I like held his arms, his limp body. And I like pulled him up and I was like, are you ready? And it was interesting. And I like held out his jammy shirt for him to like dive his head into. And it was interesting for me to watch that he was ready for that. You know, like we could have cried for a lot longer. And also, I don't know that he needed that much more. And maybe what he needed was someone to sort of pull him up and say, like, that hurt. And now we're going to put your jammies on, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know the balance. I don't think every situation is not the same, obviously. But it's just something I'm thinking about. It's just something that's in my brain of, like, how do we balance this? How do I balance this? Like, this being in a world that is full of pain and also wanting, like needing to like get up and do another day. I don't know. So that it's evolving for me. I'm in the middle of like scribbling and rewriting and doing a new, trying to figure out a pivot script.
Well, I think in the pendulum swing of from the like boomers bootstrap and, don't take a sick day. And we've had to be like, okay, that's not the way. And I think there is some ways that we like just pendulum swing really hard in the other way. And then we have to walk it back a little bit. I was at a doctor's appointment the other day and this doctor's like very chatty. And was like telling me a story. I don't know why she was telling me the story, but she was telling me a story about a patient whose kid like went to a sports game. It was a really big deal. His favorite team lost. And so they gave their kid the day off the next day, and which kind of was here and there. But she was like, how are kids ever going to learn? And if I didn't come to work every day, my game lost. And it was just such a big reaction to like one singular moment. It was, it just felt like it didn't take into account any of the nuance. And I was like, I don't know the details of the story. Like,
yeah,
I don't think that this moment is going to inhibit this child's ability to go to work in the future. But yeah, that mindset of like, just get it together. Like we've had to work hard to come out of that. And then like coming back to what is the middle ground.
Yeah. And it is, it's what's interesting to me about that story that you just described is the intensity of the reaction and how much, like that makes me think that that doctor has had to sacrifice a lot in order to keep going. And so I think that's what the trigger is like, I do this hard thing every day. This is super painful for me. I've had to develop a narrative that I push through. Therefore, seeing the softness in you is like throwing me into a crisis. So I there's no way in which I think that like, I want to live in a world that is soft. I want to live in a world where it's okay to cry anytime. And there's no shame in that. And also, I also want my kid to have tools to feel it and also put his arms up to put his pajamas on, you know, like at a certain point, and I don't know when it is, but it does feel like a weird wobble space to try to, I doubt myself a lot. I'm constantly, my brain is constantly flipping back and forth moment to moment. And I'm not worried that he will struggle to express his pain right now. And so I guess the next piece is like equipping him with other tools, not letting go of that tool and also kind of adding to the tool set. But I do not have the balance in me. So that is what is best part of what's tricky.
How has doing this rewriting of the script with Otto, has that shifted your relationship to your body or to experiencing pain in your body? Has it shifted anything for you personally?
I wish so hard to say yes right now. I don't know that it has. I mean, like, dude, my survival skills and my way of moving through the world and like the way I've learned to hold my body, it's like I do not know how to do this differently. And I think that I am realizing, like, or I can see so clearly how much that serves me in getting to do the things I want to do. There's so much I want to do. There's so many projects I want to be a part of, so many things I want to make, so many people I want to talk to. And in order to do those things, so many moments I want to be present for with my son, you know, like there's so much I want. And I feel like the narrative I have in my head or the way I've moved through the world is that I can have those things if I just abuse my body and ignore my body. I just don't know how to coexist. And then, so the rhythm of my years is that, in seasons, is that I will have like 2 to 3 months of just like relentless white knuckling, pushing through, flurry. And then I'll have like a month where I'm just like a slug. And then, you know, like, so I do not embody the thing I'm trying to teach my kid. I would love to say anything different. But especially right now.
Kind of like that narrative, if there's a voice in your hair similar to that, the doctor who was talking to me, where you're like, if you say once, like, I don't feel good, I'm not going to do this thing, or just like, I'm uncomfortable, I needed to be in a different thing, whatever it would look like to acknowledge your body, does it feel like everything would come crashing down?
In some cases, I mean, like, I think little things like what I wish I could do and what I'm like, you know, I just got my water bottle from my mini fridge, right? Like, some of it is just stupid, simple shit, like drink water, right? Like, take your vitamins, like these things that are just like, just an awareness that I have a body. But what I find is that when I'm in that mode, I don't even remember that I have to pee. Like, I just, you know, like that I enter into a mode. And so I think you are right. I think there is a way in which, like, there are really even simple things that I are very within reach that wouldn't burn the whole house down. But it's like when I'm in the mode, but like right now I'm scheduled. I'm going to be traveling every week in the month of March and into April. And so some of that stuff feels like, no, I don't have a choice. Like, I will have to get on those airplanes. I will have to dehydrate myself to fly in planes because there are not accessible bathrooms on airplanes. You know, that will be a certain amount of abuse on my body to do the things I want to do. But it's not always, like, not every decision is that extreme. And there are other little things that I can do. I can stop working before 10 and go to bed. You know, I can do those things. I just forget it when I'm in that mode.
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
Today, I am joined by Caitlin to share a parenting story. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am doing great. I'm excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have you here. As you know, we are talking about patterns this month. And the way that we have talked about patterns so far, the two generalizations that we came up with are to say that patterns can be repeated or broken, and also that patterns allow for predictions. That's just kind of our baseline where we're starting to get on the same page about how we're talking about patterns, how we're understanding them in the context of parenting. So with that in mind, I would love to hear a parenting story from you about patterns.
Yeah, this is such a great prompt and something I think about all of the time is like, what patterns do I want to carry out or repeat from my childhood or my lineage, and which ones that I want to break or recreate? When you sent the prompt over, I think one of the things that you noted was like a moment you felt proud of. And I've told this story on my podcast, Scratch That, with Rebecca, but there was a distinct moment where Charlie and I, my four-year-old, we had a conflict and he had headbutted me and we're like in bed. He asked for a show. I said, no, he headbutted me in anger and like hit my face, which is a thing that we were working through. And I just instinctively like pushed him off of me and we were on a soft bed and, it was like this reactive thing. But what I didn't account for was that our dog was right there. And so he like head bonked the dog.
Aww.
So for him, it was like this very aggressive, hurtful moment. So he cried. He was sad. I like comforted him. And then we talked about it and I apologized for throwing him, or it wasn't really a throw, but for pushing him off of me. I apologized for that and talked about it. And then we just kind of laid there and then he was quiet and he was thinking, he was like, you really need to say sorry. Like, you should say sorry. You hurt me. You pushed me and hurt me, which I already had. But like, I acknowledged it and I was like, you are so right. I was mad. You like hit me. You hurt my body. I was mad and I responded and I like pushed you in the same way that you were mad about the show and you head bonked me. And neither of those were the right response for either of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was this really beautiful moment where I took accountability. The pattern I felt like I was breaking was I wasn't like, well, that was your punishment or that's what you get.
Yeah. Yeah.
I should not have handled it in that way. You know, I should have sat up, held his body gently but firmly and said, like, we're not going to headbutt. You're not going to hit mama. But also, I'm kind of glad that it was that moment where we had this conflict and that we both could repair to each other and acknowledge that both of our responses were incorrect. And I think us being able to hold space and to be on a similar level, like I am the parent, I, as Dr. Becky would say, I'm like the sturdy leader for us. And so there is a higher level of responsibility on me to keep him safe and to set boundaries. And also, we are two equal human beings in relationship. And for him to be able to say, like, that was not cool, that was not right, you shouldn't have done that to me. And for me to be able to hold that and say, you're right, I shouldn't have. And to be able to equate that to his behavior, which is something that is a huge pattern shift from the way that I was raised and sometimes feels really clunky. I think shifting patterns can feel so tricky. I can't ever picture headbutting my parents or hitting them because I was just too scared. I would never have acted out in some of the ways that he does. But him having the space to be a kid and to have these responses, I feel like has opened a lot of beautiful space for us to have conversation. And he's learning how to control his body out of his own instinct of learning relationship versus out of fear and just like suppressing how he's feeling. Yeah. So that's a pattern that I'm just feeling really proud of that we're working on right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is such a great story. And I imagine that that'll feel really relatable to people because, yeah, you can talk about patterns on all these different levels, our smaller day-to-day patterns, but also intergenerationally in our own families. And then even larger, you know, like generation to generation, I think that that'll feel familiar to people because I think a lot of people who are parenting right now, the way they were parented, like you've shared, is that their parents are not saying sorry or like taking accountability because there's a belief that that would look like weakness, or there's this different understanding of a power dynamic between a parent and a child and authority and, you know, how to act into that. But you just have me thinking about how important modeling is. And that to me, like, that's the flip of that pattern. It's not, well, I need to have authority over you. You need to respect me as your parent, so I'll never apologize to you. It is such a different way of thinking of like, for me, I'm like, oh, I will actually respect you more if you meet me in this way that you're describing of like, I'm, you know, getting on your level and I'm just one person talking to another person. Yes, I'm your parent. Yes, you're 4 years old, but I'm giving you that respect and modeling it so that you can return that to me for myself, not someone who is parenting right now, but doing a lot of reflecting on how I was parented. I think a lot about the messages or stories that I've internalized. And a lot of times I'm like, I don't think that was ever said to me. So where did that come from? And so that's why I just am like so convinced that the modeling is really important.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anybody ever said that to me, but I think it's what I saw happen. And so I, as the kid, because what else can you do? Make your own story about it.
Yeah. So much of this is unconscious and not spoken.
Yeah. So I, for me, that's what Cosmo Parenting is about then, is like bringing that unconsciousness into awareness so that once you reflect on it, if you need to, you can do something about it. You can change that pattern.
Yeah. I'm so excited to listen to this series because the thing that feels so important to me as a parent is understanding my childhood and understanding myself as a human so that then I am consciously making decisions. Because I think as parents, it's so easy to unconsciously just kind of like repeat a pattern and without ever stopping and being like, wait, what is this thing that we're doing? Just because it has been this way or it's what my experience or memory was may not be the way I want to move forward with it. But until you can pause and like actually acknowledge it, they just keep repeating. And I think so much of a lot of harm is unconscious. I don't think that generally parents are going around wanting to cause harm to their kid. So I feel like the work is this pause. And I feel like that's what you are doing here with this series, which is just brilliant.
Okay, now I have some questions for you. And this beautiful, I love that this is the story that you shared with the prompt, like that this is a moment that you're proud of, because what is so striking about it to me is that it's the kind of, we all have had parenting moments like that, right? The messy, like that I didn't want to do, I wish I wouldn't have responded that way, that like looked way different than I wanted it to. And we all have those moments, but like very rarely do we share them in the sunlight, right? And you shared that story on our podcast too. And so I was just curious what it has felt like to you to share that story out loud with a public audience, both with listeners that know you from our podcast, but with a whole different audience. What has that felt like to you to share?
Well, as I listened back, I was like, oh, I told that in kind of a dramatic way. I said that I threw him, which was definitely not. I did not throw him. And I was like, oh, God, it sounds like I'm abusing him. So I had like a little twinge over that. But mostly, I think that shitty parenting, like it, the things that we're, if we aren't speaking about like the moments that we're not proud of, then I almost, then they get buried and then you hide them and then it almost is easier to do it again. Like once you name it, it's out in the world. I don't quite know how to describe why it feels so important for me to like acknowledge and name the moments when I really bungle a moment or just like act in a way that just isn't aligned with my values. But something about it feels like shame can't exist in the dark. Like if I can't shame spiral about it because that will only perpetuate like shitty behavior. So I feel really strongly about just like naming the moments where I like fuck something up.
I am really glad that you do, because I think everybody who listens to that story probably experiences a little bit of relief in their body that like they're like, oh, other people have moments like that too. Like that it's so deeply relatable and like cathartic to hear you describe, to name it, describe it, name all the parts you don't like about it, and then land the ship in a way that does feel really good and healthy. And
yeah, I feel like when he was littler, it was easier to like repair and re-land that ship. I feel like lately, he's so much bigger and older, and I've been feeling myself get so angry. So much bigger anger towards him, and it like stays longer, and so the repair is like it's harder for me to access.
Do you see that from him too? Does it seem harder for him too, or no?
I don't know. We've entered a phase where we have been giving like just kind of like an ultimatum or like, you know, a threat. And today he was like throwing a fit in the car because I mentioned that we were going to run to the store to get some milk. And he was like, I want to buy a car. And I'm really trying to break this habit of buying a car every time we go to the store. So I was like, we're not getting a car today. We're not even going to store with a car. And he starts to throw a fit and cry. And I got so stern because we'd had a rough night last night. And I was like, I cannot deal with this. And I was like, you are not going to cry. You are not going to throw a tantrum. Like, if you start behaving in this way, I'm going to take you home and I'm going to leave you at home with Pops. And then I'm going to go and run the errands myself. And he goes, that is not nice. That is really mean. That is not a nice thing for you to do. That would make me really sad. And I was like, you know, also like if he's throwing a whole on tantrum, I think like a natural consequence would be taking him home. But I said it in a really mean, I didn't say it kindly. It wasn't like, I see you're having a hard time and so maybe we'll like go home. It was like, if you do this thing, this other thing is going to happen and I'm going to leave you there and then you won't get to be with me. And it was mean. It was like, it felt punitive. Just, and
yeah,
it could have been a moment for us to have a conversation about cars and why every time, because what he said was, every time you say going to the store, it makes me think of a car and I want a car. And I was like, oh, this could be a moment to talk about self-control. And then I was thinking about when I think of going to Target to grab milk, I also want to get five other things. So this is a weird ramble, but
this is what I was going to ask you, is like how this pattern has been evolving for the two of you.
I want to say it's like all just so beautiful and we always have these beautiful moments of repair and I'm like doing so well, but it feels like it just kind of gets, it's like fewer and farther between, but they feel bigger. And I have been noticing just more and more like, I cannot fathom having behaved this way at five. Like, my God, like I come back to that narrative and then I can spiral into the like, you're going to grow up and like be the, you know, I just could go all the way. It's like, you're having a hard time in this moment. You're going to be a terrible adult and never have any self-control. And so I think I'm still in it. You know, it's not like we're just going to keep plugging and calling out our shitty behavior and trying to do better.
And telling the stories as you go so other people can bear witness to the mess of it all that we're all in. Because I'm like, as you're talking, my head could not be nodding more because we've had so many moments like that. We've been doing, it's funny. We're like, Otto is what, like 7 months older than Charlie? I feel like sometimes we're like just a half blip ahead of you in some of the like developmental stuff. And so coincidentally or not, we've also been doing a lot of ultimatums and like if you kind of language. And so Otto has been doing that back to us. So which is really like this clarifying moment of like, oh yeah, that's how we sound. Of course you're trying to use that tool. And that is not the kind of tool we want to give you. So I think I don't know. I just really, really, really am loving the way that we're seeing these moments we were proud over, these moments where we thought we're like, yes, that was right. And how that just continues to shift and evolve as we both get older together, our kids and us, and they change and we reflect and we pivot that like, yeah, it's just so many, it's just like, what kind of project, I'm thinking of like parenting as a project right now. What other projects do you have that many moments that just keep coming? It's like this endless series of like, and we're going to do it again and again and again and again. There's like 6 billion moments that we're going to share together.
And each one is just building on the next one and the next one and the next one.
Yes. And then, my hope, I guess the greatest hope is that underneath all of that, there is this like deep current of repair and this deep current of honesty and openness. There's a deep current of validating everyone's experiences in the room, whatever that is, that underneath this, the messiness of it all, there's something cohesive underneath the billion of moments where we get it right and wrong and everything in between. Oh, sweet Charlie. I love the way he talks with you. He knows how to advocate for himself. He knows how to use his words. He knows how to say what he feels. That means that there's something good happening around him, I think.
Yeah. When you try and build your life around kindness, and you talk a lot about how to be kind to people, they will call you on your fucking shit when you're not being kind.
That is not very kind. What I've noticed about what you said is that was not a kind thing. Oh, autos will be like, if you do not come and play with me right now, I will never play with you again.
You're like, great.
Is that the case?
Do you promise?
Yeah, it's just funny. I mean, all he is trying to do and all we are trying to do in that moment is like gain a bit of control.
Yeah.
In the middle of the flurry of it. This was fun. I liked doing this. This felt good. I almost wish we could like send this to Abby and be like, if you're going to air our episodes, make sure you have this giant addendum at the end. It feels like an important part to the story.
I think our episodes, some of them are already live, aren't they?
Yours might already be. And I don't know. Mine's coming in March, I think. But it might be by the time that this is airing, it probably will be. Okay. Well, thanks for going on that journey with me. I love you two together. I love seeing how you're growing and evolving together.
Same. Right back at you.
All right. For people listening, you know, we always love to see what you're thinking on Patreon. So I don't know if there's any scripts you're working on that are in the middle of being revised and how you're working that through. But we would love to hear. Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.